them. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time.
Hello and welcome to 32 Fans Movies, where we discuss all things movies past, present, and occasionally future. My name is Sammy Chester.
And I'm Ob Sadensky. Today we're going to talk about our favorite baseball movies as we move ahead towards our 64 movie sports movie bracket.
The winners so far: soccer was Damn United, hockey was Slapshot, golf was Caddyshack, tennis was Borg versus McEnroe, basketball was Love and Basketball, and football was the one and only Brian's Song. Besides Ob and myself, we also have Josh Cantor subbing in for our regular host, Will. Josh, all I know is that you were a legendary T-ball player. What otherwise is your baseball pedigree?
I love baseball. I grew up watching baseball. Greatest moment of my life, other than, of course, getting married and having kids, was going to game two of the World Series in 2005 when my Chicago White Sox won the game and won the World Series. Was a wonderful moment with my dad.
So, Josh, I didn't know you were a White Sox fan. It's really important that you're with us then, because I would say the 1919 White Sox are probably the defining ball club of baseball movie.
A little excessive, so, yeah.
Yeah, they're all over the place. Joining us as well is Jason Martinez, a pro baseballer for the last decade, except with stats, not with bats and balls. Jason, you're the founder of Roster Resources, part of the baseball website FanGraph. Can you tell us, our listeners, what's your history with the game? What drew you from the batter's box to the stat sheets? Is it the movies?
I've been working in baseball since 2009, and I had already been in a career for 10 years. I was a director at the YMCA. Everybody was getting laid off, and I decided I need to start thinking about something else here. Baseball has been the thing that I love since I was a kid.
Have baseball movies always been a part of your love affair with the game?
Of course. You know, let's just go back to yesterday, the World Series, the Nationals win. I don't pay too close attention to the playoffs. I mostly want to see the last out of the game so I could see these guys celebrate. Steven Strasburg, I go, that guy went to the same college as I did.
You love the emotions of the game more than the raw numbers. I thought you were going to say you wait for the final out so you can immediately crunch the numbers and like put the stats up in your table.
Well, I want to see that last out because I start thinking about all these guys that, this is his first World Series. And you think about the journey that they've had. For what I do, I'm tracking from the time they get drafted or signed and through the minors. And there's a whole journey and there's a whole story. And if you're thinking about a movie, you get to know them as people and their lives outside of baseball. And you learn more about that journey.
And I think the other thing is that the movies we're going to see cover the whole life journey of baseball from Little League all the way until 40-year-old, 45-year-olds showing up in the majors. What is the unique DNA of a baseball movie? What sets it apart from a football movie, a tennis movie, hockey, all the rest of them? You know, so we're not talking about the lovable losers coming back and winning the big game or getting the walk-off home run, because something like that is happening in every sports movie. What kind of running theme, if anything, do you see in movies like Bad News Bears, League of Their Own, Kevin Costner, Pride of the Yankees, The Sandlot, etc.?
I think it's less about the baseball, but when I was a kid, I mostly cared about baseball. I couldn't relate to anything else. As I went through school, middle school, high school, I didn't care about much besides baseball. So even if I was curious about our world and our country and things like that, if I got to read a book about Jackie Robinson, I could understand what was going on in our world, in our country at that time. And the same thing with a movie.
I don't know if I quite agree with you, because, you know, I think you could say that about a number of the movies, that they really show the world outside of the game. I think, soccer movies do that really well. Some of the football movies do that really well. You know, they definitely show racial tensions. There's three issues that are like, this is a baseball movie. One of them is definitely mythology. That's like number one. I have never seen a sport in a movie that is so wrapped up in the mythology of that sport. We're talking, you know, fireworks, July 4th. The word legend is in every single movie except Bad News Bears. I think Bad News Bears is the only exception. And I think that sort of speaks to why Hollywood has a love affair with baseball that it doesn't have with any other sport, because Hollywood is also obsessed with its own legend. In Sandlot, they capture this really well when Babe Ruth shows up.
Remember, kid, there's heroes and there's legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
Bob, you've seen all the other sports movies with me. Have you ever seen mythology waved as much as it is on screen here?
No, yeah, I think you're definitely right. And I think Jason is right. Also, I think the thing that's like unique about these baseball movies and frankly baseball itself is the way the story of baseball just intertwines so deeply with the American story. I think best encapsulated by the Terrence Mann monologue at the end of Field of Dreams.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again.
The story of America, the story of baseball, it's just kind of this tapestry of one leaning up against the other. There's just like so many themes in these movies. You talk about Sugar is really an immigrant story. If you talk about Pride of the Yankees is this story of this model American life. This mythology of like days gone by when like things used to be good and like trying to recapture that somehow, I think cuts across a lot of these movies.
A third of these movies, they wouldn't need to have made the movie if the father and son would have just played catch when they were kids. That literally would have taken the drama out of, half the movies. So I think father-son issues, daddy issues, I mean, even like The Rookie, there's like, Dennis Quaid has major daddy issues. And then finally, the last thing, which I'm surprised none of you hit on, is broadcasters. No other sports movie puts broadcasters so front and center. I mean, look at Pride of the Yankees. The famous scene in Pride of the Yankees, I just watched this last night. I was shocked that we see the scene from the broadcaster. We hear the scene. It's narrated by the broadcaster. We don't even get to like listen to Lou Gehrig until the very end. And in the best baseball movie of all time, and I'm showing my cards here, what does the protagonist grow up to be? What is his job in the future?
The broadcaster.
Yeah, he literally grows up to be a baseball broadcaster. So, Jason, you have the most knowledge of baseball here. What is it about broadcasters in the sport of baseball that they have to be so central to the movie?
I think the history of the game just goes back so far where people didn't watch the game on TV because there was no TVs. And so you had this person, when you listen to some of those guys, Vin Scully and the Red Barbers and all those guys way back in the day, they were speaking to thousands and thousands of people across the country, and they were painting a picture of this game that most people couldn't see. They would read about it in the newspapers, and maybe they can hear the crack of the bat and some fans, but mostly this guy telling you what was happening.
I think it's also that baseball by its nature just has like a lot more dead time that needs to be filled with a broadcaster talking or telling stories, and baseball just for whatever reason lends itself better to that history and storytelling that I think other sports, maybe because it's changed in less fundamental ways than, say basketball or football have from like the 1940s. But like, I'm a huge basketball and football fan. I couldn't be less interested in like stories of players from the 1930s and 1940s and 1950s. Whereas for many baseball fans, like that's like the most interesting thing about baseball is to like learn about Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio and Honus Wagner.
Let's jump right into the bracket. It's a 14 movie bracket. Jason, you're going to be joined by either Josh or Ob as the judge for every matchup. I'll be the tiebreaker and I'll give the quick intros. The movies were seeded based on the average ranking of about 50 online ranking of baseball movies. So we've really covered the map here. Two things are at stake. As Ob said, top five movies will earn our ticket to our March 2020 All Sports 64 movie bracket. We're looking forward to that. And number two, we will, with Jason and Josh's help, identify the number one baseball movie of all time. So we have 10 contenders. We're going to race through the play-in very quickly. We're going to pick a top kids movie and a top documentary, five of each. The winners will face off to go as our number 14 seed. The kids movie. The contestants are Hardball with Keanu Reeves, Little Big League, everyone's favorite Minnesota Twins movie, Rookie of the Year, everyone's favorite Chicago Cubs movie, Angels in the Outfield, we know what team that is about, and then a special Battlefield Baseball, which our roving reporter, Will Seaman, our missing host, will give us an update about.
So I watched Battlefield Baseball, the one and only baseball movie that I have seen. It is a Japanese film. I watched the French dubbed version on YouTube. So I wasn't able to understand any of what was being said, but I don't know if that would have really helped. There was a lot going on. A guy gets his head impaled with a baseball bat. There's a really sad musical number about how this guy threw a pitch so hard it killed his dad. That's about it.
Those are the five kids movies. Jason, what's your favorite?
I'm bummed that you guys didn't include The Kid from Left Field. Have you heard of that movie?
I haven't even heard of that one.
There's one from the 50s, and then they did a remake in 1979 with Gary Coleman talking about Willis Kid. It's about the Padres. I grew up in the 80s. That was my favorite. That was my
every
favorite
team,
movie right
every
there.
Every team needs their movie. And we could do a whole other bracket with just each team gets a movie, and we'll face it off that way. But unfortunately, we didn't give Gary Coleman his day in the sun. Which of these five do you like?
I'll go with Rookie of the Year. I was older when those all came out. I wasn't paying attention to kids' baseball movies, but I remember seeing Rookie of the Year. Kids love it too, so I'm going to go with that one.
Rookie of the Year is my favorite of those also. I love Rookie of the Year. I rewatched it about a year ago just because I think it was on or whatever. It holds up. It's great.
Put my vote down for Little Big League because I'm from Minnesota, but I think Rookie of the Year is our winner for the kids.
Much as I hate the Cubs, I vote Rookie of the Year as well.
Let's look at the documentaries because there's another Minnesota Twins movie there, so there's another chance for me. Five documentaries. We have No-No about a pitcher pitching a no-hitter on LSD. We have Ball Player Pelotoro, which is the Minnesota Twins movie that I can't pronounce. We have Up for Grabs about lawsuits, Battered Bastards of Baseball, a minor league movie, and Heading Home, a movie which needs no introduction.
Just because I live in Israel, I'm going to choose Heading Home.
Okay, so we have one vote for Heading Home. I'm not sure if it deserves any others.
I'll go with No-No, that one about Doc Ellis. That was that era, that Pirates team, just so much fun. And the fact that a guy can be in that state and go out and do that is pretty amazing.
I saw No-No in the Minnesota Twins movie, so I'm going to go with No-No as well. No-No against Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year is a classic kids baseball movie.
You see, after the game, a lot of guys like to ice up their arm. Still other fellas think that heat is the way to go. But I have discovered the secret, Henry. Hot ice. That's right, hot ice. I heat up the ice cubes. It's the best of both worlds.
Kind of tells us that there hasn't been enough good baseball documentaries made.
Been a lot of great kids movies. Let's have the number 14 play and go right up against the number 3 Moneyball. Moneyball came out 2001. It's how the Oakland A's in the 2000s transformed baseball using data. Aaron Sorkin wrote the script. Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Robert Wright, even Chris Pratt shows up.
I will vote for Moneyball. Moneyball is a movie that was probably one of the movies I like looked forward to the most in my lifetime because I absolutely love the book. Aaron Sorkin is probably my favorite screenwriter, and I just couldn't wait for this movie to come out. I thought it was very fun and enjoyable, but a lot of things that bother me about it, the way it plays fast and loose with the truth, it went a little bit too far in suggesting that the Oakland A's had essentially discovered on-base percentage and that it was something that didn't exist and no one was aware of prior to 2002. It also made it seem to a ridiculous extent the A's won, that they became a good team because of players like Scott Hattenberg and Chad Bradford. And, oh, by the way, we also had Mulder, Zito, Hudson, Miguel Tejada, Eric Chavez, all these superstar players, which, you know, very well may have also been part of their Moneyball strategy and how to identify these players. The movie makes it seem that these little tiny things are what made them into a great team and not the fact that their roster was loaded with superstars.
My problem with the movie is that they kind of waste Philip Seymour Hoffman, but that's not really a baseball problem. That's just an acting problem. Jason, I feel I'm disrespecting you because you're our stats guy and this is our stats movie.
I grew up in the 80s, so the video games weren't what they are today. And so, you know, things would bother me about playing a baseball video game where, you know, the guy hits it into the gap and it goes to the wall and he hits a single. And then I'm just throwing at the TV because I'm so angry. And so yeah, little things like this do bother me about movies. But
also the fact that they made a movie about nerds playing with numbers in sports. I think there's something remarkable about that.
People who run ball clubs, they think in terms of buying players. Your goal shouldn't be to buy players. Your goal should be to buy wins. And in order to buy wins, you need to buy runs. You're trying to replace Johnny Damon. The Boston Red Sox see Johnny Damon and they see a star who's worth $7.5 million a year. When I see Johnny Damon, what I see is an imperfect understanding of where runs come from. The guy's got a great glove. He's a decent leadoff hitter. He can steal bases, but is he worth the $7.5 million a year that the Boston Red Sox are paying him? No. Baseball thinking is medieval.
I think just to get baseball on a bigger scale and to get more people, even though, like, if I tell somebody what I do now, you know, they just go, oh, you're like Moneyball, and I'm like, nah, not really. But yeah, I mean, that's a big part of what anybody who works in baseball does. You deal with these numbers, and there's a lot of numbers that are available now, and you have to look at this, and there's some people that are really, really good at analyzing it. It is an important movie, even though it is flawed. Yeah, as my vote, it deserves to move to the next round.
I always thought it was like a deeply ironic choice by Moneyball to have a movie about like finding hidden value and, you know, unknown players, and then cast Brad Pitt in the lead role. They should have found some guy who you've never heard of who's 80% as good as Brad Pitt that they could pay, you know, $45. That's, you know, that would be a Moneyball approach.
That's true. Well, you know, Hollywood doesn't have to play by the rules of baseball. They just have to make movies about it. Classic against a super contemporary movie, which is our number 6 Pride of the Yankees against number 11 Sugar. Pride of the Yankees, first off, came out in 1942. It's a biopic of the great Yankee first baseman. It came out shortly after he died from, I guess, Lou Gehrig's disease.
For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad brag. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
That I might have been given a bad break, but I've got an awful lot to live for. Thank you.
And Gary Cooper plays Lou Gehrig, joined by a number of Yankee greats, including Babe Ruth. Going up against Sugar, which came out in 2008, it's a contemporary account, as Ob said earlier, of how Dominicans struggle to reach the majors.
Sugar tells a very important story about the way the game is, especially the last 30 years.
Baseball as it is in our imagination against baseball as it actually is, in terms of what baseball players look like and the actual odds that even the most amazing talented young prospect will ever fulfill their dreams of becoming a major league all-star.
The way that Lou Gehrig in Pride of the Yankees reaches the majors is sort of...
Yeah, it's like ho-hum. Yeah, he was good at baseball, and he's like, oh, I'll join the Yankees, and then I'll be, you know, the 10th best player in history. Whereas, like, this guy who we actually see, like, dominant and, like, just striking out guys, throwing these, like, crazy sliders, throwing 100 miles an hour, and never even comes close to sniffing big league action.
Starting pitcher for American League, Sugar Santo!
The fact that he got to the United States was such a big deal, and that's like a small percentage of those guys. He made it to the United States in a very low-level league, but once you get there, it's like, wow, he made it, you know, and then you still have so far to go.
I also like Sugar, how they have that he's playing in cornfields in Iowa. It's sort of obviously a nice touch to another movie that's coming.
I'll go with Sugar.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I think it's a better movie, and I think it's definitely a better baseball movie. Pride of the Yankees had to me, a very surprising lack of actual baseball in it. It's really, was to me, like a love story about this great guy, Lou Gehrig, and oh, by the way, he was a baseball player too. Pretty cool when Babe Ruth showed up, which I had remembered, but still surprised when I saw him. In a way, it's like, never realized this before. I'd seen it a long time ago. The title to me, a double entendre. This movie to me is really more of like a, you know, pro-America wartime propaganda film than a baseball movie. And the Pride of the Yankees is not talking about the baseball team in this reading of it. It's really just like this amazing, you know, young American, good-looking guy who does everything right and plays by the rules and has no warts and is just this perfect, upstanding individual. And then,
and,
you know,
and sacrifices his life at a young age for
his
country.
Correct. Yeah. It's, I don't know why that, probably I was younger when I saw it, but like that thought had never occurred to me. And this time it was just like glaring. Sugar obviously has a lot of like, you know, political and cultural subtext to it as well, but I thought it was just a lot better executed and a lot more emotional and compelling. That scene at the very end where he's on the subway and he just gets that glimpse of Yankee Stadium, of, you know, that life that could have been. And I thought that also just was a really nice connection of these two movies, you know, by accident that they ended up in the same corner of the bracket. But I would vote for Sugar as well.
Sugar then is steaming right into Moneyball.
Close. I'm going to go with Moneyball.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. It's closer than I ever would have expected. And I know I kind of dished on Moneyball a little bit, but that's only because of like disappointed I was compared to what I expected for this movie. But yeah, I'll go with Moneyball. There's this big divide in among the fandom of, you know, people who like long for the good old days where it was about toughness and, you know, this and that. And now it's like all these nerds with their calculators that are rooting baseball. And maybe it's just because I'm a nerd, but I've found that the focus on stats and like understanding them has just like made baseball so much more interesting and beautiful to me than I ever realized when I was younger. There's just like such an elegance to the way the stats and baseball work and like just help you understand. And like that, like the fact that like you can take, like if you have this, you know, on base percentage and this, you know, runs produced, that like you could basically determine how many wins a team is going to win within a few wins almost every year. There's just this perfect equilibrium to baseball stats that just makes me love the game more than I ever did.
Moneyball would make you think you can sort of just pluck the players looking only at numbers. And Sugar is deeply, as Jason was saying, it's deeply about the human element of the game. If someone asked me, what's a great baseball movie that I've never heard of and that I should see? I would say Sugar is number one.
Yeah, I never heard of this movie before, and I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it.
Let's leave that bracket for the time being. Moneyball took the top position, and Sugar fell into the loser's bracket. And let's jump and go into the number 8 versus number 9 matchup. Now, Josh was telling me before we got on that he thought this was the heavy hitter bracket. It has the number 1 seed waiting next as well. Number 8 is Major League. It came out in 1989. Comedy of cast-off players rallying the Cleveland Indians to the pennant. Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen, Wesley Snipes, Rene Russo, Bob Uecker, all of them show up.
Straight ball, I hit it very much. Curve ball, bats are afraid. I asked Joe Boone to come. Take fear from bats. I offer him cigar and rum. He will come.
You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff.
Shit, Harris.
Ah. Jesus. I like him very much. But he no help with curveball.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Okay, Harris, let's not start a holy war here.
Wouldn't leave a rum sitting around out here with this group.
It's very bad. Steal Joe Boo's rum. He's very bad.
The one thing I'll say is that Charlie is a high school pitcher, and he actually had a pretty good fastball, but he said he took steroids for about 6 months after he got the role in order to look good on screen. Which is a very Charlie Sheen thing to admit to doing. And League of Their Own came out only 3 years later in 1992. And it's about women's baseball having a league in the World War II era. Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell, joined by John Lovitz, Tom Hanks, David Strathairn.
Okay, this was a really, really hard one. Major League was like the first R-rated movie my parents let me see as a kid. This has a lot of nostalgia for me. It was probably my favorite movie as a kid. I found myself watching it just quoting the next line pretty much in every scene, even though I haven't seen it in a long time. I really liked the story, and Bob Uecker was amazing in this movie. Speaking of broadcasters.
Yeah, the broadcaster stole the movie.
He really did. It was really good, and it held up 20 years later. That being said, and this is really, really hard for me, that being said, I really liked A League of Their Own more because I think there was so much passion involved. Well, not by Gina Davis, but by the rest of the players. And I loved Tom Hanks in this movie. I don't know if this is considered one of his better roles. It seems a little underrated because he's done, you know, the Forrest Gumps and all those movies.
This was his first big role. I think this was kind of his coming out role.
I think just because of him alone, I'm going to put this ahead. He was great. The no crying in baseball.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Oh. Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig shit. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
I'm going to give a nod to League of Their Own. And I just had this one question I want to leave everybody with. Did Gina Davis drop the ball on purpose at the end?
Yes.
For sure.
Not clear. It's really not clear.
The movie leaves it ambiguous, but I think it's yes.
Okay. But why? Why?
Because of the scene at the beginning where her mom tells her to like go. Or no, it's her. It's her when she's older. She tells her child to like go easy on your younger brother or younger sister.
Yeah, because otherwise that scene makes no sense. Like, why is she telling it?
And
to
she
go
said
easy?
In the movie, you wanted it more. So that was the actress who played the younger sister. She has claimed in interviews that that she did not drop the ball on purpose. So I don't know.
For anyone who's interested in Shea Serrano's latest book, Movies and Other Things, he does like a full breakdown of this question. So,
okay. And what's his conclusion?
I think he agrees that yes is probably the right answer, but you know, he spends many pages trying to, you know, go through all the pros and the cons.
Well, Jason anyway. And Josh, you guys better get ready because Av came to play today in his movie matchups. He did some research. Jason, what's your pick? That was like a pretty big upset there. Major League is, I think, most Major League ball players' number one baseball movie of all time. And Josh threw it to the sidelines in the first round.
No. I love Major League. How dare you?
You threw it to you voted for a league of their own. It
I'm sorry.
On
Tom Hanks, just Tom Hanks gave it, had to because of Tom Hanks. He was so good.
I'm going to go with Major League. And I think the thing is, they're both classic movies. And I've seen Major League probably 30 times. And I've seen A League of Their Own like 3 times. And I think it's more that sweet spot where you're a certain age. And I think Major League, I was probably 14 or 15. Then League of Their Own, I was probably busy with, you know, college stuff or whatever. But Major League is that one where I recite every line of that movie. There's so many classics.
A League of Their Own is very sappy, I think. If Madonna wasn't so amazing on camera, I never thought she was a great actress until I saw this movie. I think Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell are really, really
good. They're pretty good.
They steal the movie for me for sure. My one question for you guys about Major League, Tom Berenger, who is essentially the lead, how does he keep just walking into his ex-wife's house, like into her bedroom? He just keeps walking into
the
her,
elevator.
Like,
why does it? And how about the elevator from the boyfriend? It opens into the apartment. What is that?
Yeah, he just keeps walking into people's houses like the whole time, and it's never explained.
Yeah. Unclear. She doesn't lock her. It's Cleveland, so you know, whatever. It's no crime.
Yeah, I'm going with Major League. As I said, I just found A League of Their Own has some great roles. John Lovitz, he might be the best. Major League, I think, is sort of a poor man's Slapshot, the hockey movie. I don't think it's in Slapshot's realm. But it's similar, and so it has the win for me. You know who they're going up against, though? They're going up against number one overall preseeded movie, Bull Durham. Kevin Costner has come to play, you guys. It came out in 1988, pretty much the same year that all these movies came out, the late 80s and the early 90s. The movie is the classic minor league season of a young pitcher, a veteran catcher, and a baseball groupie. Ron Shelton, when he wasn't playing street ball in preparation for White Men Can't Jump, he was a minor league ball player, and this was his coming out party. He directed and wrote this movie.
There's 6 months in a season. That's about 25 weeks. That means if you get just one extra flare a week, just one, a gork, you get a ground ball, you get a ground ball with eyes, you get a dying quail. Just one more dying quail a week, and you're in Yankee Stadium. You still don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Get the hell out of here.
All right. Send you a postcard.
Send me a postcard. Hey, I made it.
You made it. You made shit.
I got brains, but you got talent.
Kevin Costner, Tim Robbins, Susan Sarandon play all the necessary characters.
As much as I love Major League, I think Bull Durham is, it's an almost perfect movie. If you can overlook the fact that this guy, you know, his first professional season, which I think they must be in high A, because they say it's the Carolina League. They say it's A ball.
It's a real minor league team.
It could happen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it could happen like, you know, like a Steven Strasburg type gets drafted out of college and they know this guy's going to move quick. But, you know, he's in A ball for a couple months and then he gets called up to the majors. That doesn't happen. Besides that, it's an almost perfect movie for me. I mean, as far as that minor league atmosphere and the story and the old veteran who's sticking around the minors for so long, and he's that guy. There's so many of those guys, of those catchers, you know, with the way I look at depth charts and, you know, which minor leaguers are ones that you should know and who's not. And with the catchers, it's overlooked because some of them are just there to be the coach. It's like you need to have that coach on the field. So you got that story. My grandmother came over from Australia. She met my grandfather during the war. And then they got married. My grandfather passed away about 10 years later. And then so my grandmother was a widow when the San Diego Padres had a minor league team here. And she kind of fell in love with the game. She was even dating one of the players, my mom always tells me.
Are you trying to malign your grandmother and say that she was a baseball groupie?
No.
Is the movie based on her? Just be honest.
It might be. No. I don't know much about it. It's just funny to hear that. My mom tell me about this. You know, Susan Sarandon's character, she loves baseball. I mean, she just relates to it in a certain way where she's just attracted to these men. And I think But
I don't think she's attracted to the guys as much as she's attracted to the game. And then they're just sort of characters in the game.
But I think she loves the game. She's a woman that loves the game. She loves going out there. She understands the game. So I say I relate to my grandmother being, you know, a widow and in her 30s and going out to watch baseball. And this is minor league baseball games.
Major League is kind of a minor league movie in a lot of ways. It's fun, but it's, I guess by the 30th time you've seen it, you've sort of seen it once.
It's a comedy. It's a great comedy. It's not, it doesn't compare to a great drama like Bull Durham.
I'm going to have an unpopular take here. I thought Bull Durham was a bit overrated. I know, oh my God, what, I can't believe it, right? I love the Kevin Costner character. I think he was great and the passion and all that stuff, but Tim Robbins' character was like silly and goofy, and I kept, it was hard for me not to think of Shawshank, but that's not his fault. I'm going to give the nod to Major League. I just liked it more. And I just want to know also why everybody in Bull Durham is super, super sweaty. Like every time they took off their hat, they were drenched in sweat. I just didn't get that one.
I just think minor leagues, people sweat a lot because there's just no AC and they're in buses. Josh, I am doubling up with you. I am giving my vote to Major League as well. So Bull Durham is going right out of the bracket, but it will still be in the loser's bracket. So we will have a chance to still sneak in, but it is out of the running as our number one movie. So the number one goes down hard. Major League grabs that ticket to the dance, and we're going to jump over to Eight Men Out, our number seven, versus The Sandlot at number 10. Eight Men Out, it came out, of course, in the year 1988, because what else is new? It's about the 1919 Black Sox, Shoeless Joe Jackson throwing the World Series. It has a lot of guys in it, John Cusack, Charlie Sheen. Of course, David Strathairn shows up, Christopher Lloyd of everyone's favorite children's movie.
Is it true what they're saying in there about Joe and the others?
Don't be too down on the guys, fellas. When you grow up, things get complicated.
You didn't do nothing wrong, did you, Buck?
Guess I never grew up. I still get such a bang out of it, playing ball. When a bat meets that ball and you can just feel that ball just give, and you know it's gonna go a long way. Damn, if you don't feel like you're gonna live forever. You couldn't give that up, not for nothing.
How do you think they're gonna call it tomorrow?
The Sandlot came out in 1993. It's the coming-of-age story par excellence with baseball set in the early 60s. The cast is a bunch of no-name kids that actually look exactly the same 30 years later. I kid you not, Google it right now while we're talking, and you're like, oh, they haven't changed at all. And also James Earl Jones shows up, because why not?
Eight Men Out, I thought was like, okay. I thought it tells an interesting story about, you know, kind of these guys pushed into desperation out of economic circumstance of, you know, the mean, greedy auditors that refuse to give them their fair share. I think the biggest flaw is that there was like too many characters and none of them really stood out. And it was just like hard to keep track of who's who and like who was, you know, fully in and who was ambivalent and who was.
Yeah, why is Charlie Sheen even in the movie besides the chance to take steroids again? Like, what does he do in the movie?
Yeah, I don't know. Sandlot, however, is really one of my favorite childhood movies. It kind of really represents baseball in its purest form, which is just little kids just playing for hours and hours and hours on a summer afternoon until it's time to go home for dinner, which I just absolutely love.
There was only one night game a year. On the 4th of July, the whole sky would brighten up with fireworks, giving us just enough light for a game. We played our best then, because I guess we all felt like the big leaguers under the lights of some great stadium. Benny felt like that all the time. You see, for us, baseball was a game. But for Benjamin Franklin Rodriguez, baseball was life.
Okay,
go ahead. When I was in school, we used to say something like this. Listen here.
You know that? Listen to
me. Oh, beautiful life, far spacious skies.
The only thing, you know, looking back seeing this movie now is that it's unfortunate that Squint has to get canceled, but, you know, that's what happens sometimes.
Is that your favorite scene, or that's a scene you'd have to remove?
Well, yeah, I don't think that would play very well to today's audiences, but, you know, he tried his best. You know, Wendy Peppercorn was obviously a very beautiful young woman.
Into Younger Men, which was also, I think, every 8-year-old boy's dream, that hot teenage girls.
If we're talking about canceled, we'll get to Bad News Bears soon.
Yeah, that's a whole
Child
other
abuse. Yeah, we'll
that's
get
a whole
there.
Other kind of kids movie. Jason, you're going to vote for Sandlot, or you're going to hold out for 8 Men Out?
Oh, yeah. No, if I saw 8 Men Out, I don't remember it, and I think that's probably the only one that I haven't seen in this whole list. I can't imagine it being better than The Sandlot. I mean, The Sandlot.
It isn't. It isn't. How is The Sandlot 10? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it doesn't get more respect from critics. What I'll say about 8 Men Out, a little different than Av, is that this should have been a great movie, given that, as we'll see, Shoeless Joe Jackson plays such a key role in so many movie stories. And there's so much here. Gangsters, money, you know, prohibition, baseball, World Series, you know, the White Sox, Josh. And yet they kind of fumble the ball. Like, they kind of mess up where I think would have been an easy story. As opposed to, like, The Sandlot, there was really, like, no story to go with. And they, you know, they made something unforgettable. Field of Dreams. Kevin Costner is back in it because he's our number two movie and he's going up against Sandlot. Costner's movie, Field of Dreams, came out the year after Bull Durham. He knew that he needed another baseball movie in this bracket to head him, to give him a chance to win. It's an Iowa farmer with daddy issues, builds a baseball field in his cornfield, and the entire 1919 Black Sox show up as a result. Kevin Costner, James Earl Jones, Ray Liotta, Burt Lancaster in his final movie.
Chance to squint at a sky so blue that it hurts your eyes just to look at it. To feel the tingle in your arm as you connect with the ball. To run the bases, stretch a double into a triple, and flop face first into third. Wrap your arms around the bag. That's my wish, Rickinsella. That's my wish. And is there enough magic out there in the moonlight to make this dream come true?
Field of Dreams is probably my favorite sports movie ever. I was introduced to it when I was like a 6 or 7 year old by a babysitter who would come babysit for me on Saturday nights and would bring movies for me to watch, and we would watch them together. And after he brought me Field of Dreams, I think we watched that like 8 times in a row, because I just like immediately fell in love with the magic of it, the history of baseball contained in it. It's just, it's one of my favorite movies ever. I drove cross country with a couple friends back in like 2009 or 2008, and I visited the Grand Canyon and Mount Rushmore and all sorts of other amazing places of Americana. But the most memorable one was the afternoon we spent just shagging fly balls in Dyersfield, Iowa, at the actual Field of Dreams where they filmed it. It was one of the most memorable experiences of my life.
People will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door, as innocent as children, longing for the past. And they'll walk out to the bleachers, sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines, where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game, and it'll be as if they'd dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
You going to the game next year? They're having Yankees play White Sox in the field in Iowa.
I have no plans to travel to Iowa for that, but you know, that sounds awesome.
Serious?
Yeah. Baseball is really into baseball movies. Jason may know a bit more about this because he's closer to the game. But yeah, they really celebrate Major League, Sandlot, Field of Dreams. They don't celebrate 8 Men Out, surprisingly. But I guess Field of Dreams is as close as they come. So, Jason, before you vote, I think something has to be said for the opposing player here. Both Sandlot and Field of Dreams are basically about kids wanting to play catch with their dad. I think that's the drama of both of them. The main difference between the two movies, and both of them have great lines. I'll give you that. Both of them have great lines, though I think Sandlots are better. But ultimately, this movie comes down to, in a battle of ghosts, who are you going to pick? The Babe or Shoeless Joe?
I feel like this should be the championship here. Playing catch with your dad is like the greatest thing in the world. And if you don't have that, even if that's all you do, that's something. It's like it's such an important bond for a dad and his son. And so, you know, obviously there's a lot more that goes to Field of Dreams, and you know, I've never been to the Midwest, but this makes me want to go out there and see a beautiful baseball field like that.
So you should, Jason, you should know that our brother podcast does an annual baseball game extravaganza in the Midwest. And next time they're doing it, we'll make sure to connect you. A bunch of listeners get together, they fly out, and they usually see a few games off in the Twins.
I'm down, yeah.
James Earl Jones of The Sandlot is going to retire to the loser's bracket, where he's going to play Sugar. and James Earl Jones of Field of Dreams will keep on going. We have one bracket left. First matchup there is going to be The Natural, number 4, and number 13, The Rookie. The best way to sum up these two movies, although they came out, Natural came out in 1984, Rookie came out in 2002, is both of them are about old guys showing up out of nowhere to make the major leagues. The difference is that The Natural has Robert Redford, Glenn Close, Kim Basinger, Robert Duvall in sort of a wasted role. It's based on a famous book directed by a famous director, Barry Levinson.
Those are your winnings, Slugger.
This is a gag, Hobbs. Pick it up. Get out of here.
If it isn't enough money, tell us what you've got in mind.
To hit away.
I thought I could rely on your honor, Hobbs.
You're about to.
You're a foolish, foolish man. You've forgotten something. Your past.
I don't care. Go on. Get on the phone.
No. It won't be necessary. I like the action.
And The Rookie is a Disney movie.
Hey, guess what?
What?
Your daddy is going to be a major league pitcher.
Really?
Yeah, really. What do you think about that, huh?
Cool. Can't believe it. Huh? Who are you going to play for?
We're called the Devil Rays.
What's a Devil Ray?
It's a fish.
What color is it?
Black.
Can you eat it?
When they couldn't get Kevin Costner, so they took discount Kevin Costner, which is Dennis Quaid, and he kind of does a mean vinegar stroke every time he pitches the ball or looks at his wife or like sweats or walks around in the rain. There's a lot of rain in The Rookie, and it's a true story. Number 4, Natural. Number 13, Rookie.
The problem with The Rookie is that based on a true story, and I think the reality is
that's the problem.
Relief pitchers who throw hard could be great one year. They're bad the next year. They're hurt the next year. They're out of baseball. Their journeys can be, and they've been in the minor leagues for 7 or 8 years. You look at The Rookie, yes, it's a great story, but there are a lot of great stories, similar stories. Some guys are, you know, nowadays, I'm an Uber driver in the off season.
Sounds like your vote is against The Rookie more than it's for Natural.
I've watched The Natural maybe 15 years ago. And I know it's Robert Redford, it's the classic movie, but it's a fantasy, right? I mean, what happens to Robert Redford after he makes it to the majors? Do we know? How long is his career?
It's like The Rookie. Well, it's a magical
it's a year, then he gets hurt.
And then he's stomach. Done.
Yeah, they like poison him. It's really weird.
The ending of The Natural is what most people remember.
And then he gets to meet his son and play catch. There you go.
Cool thing about getting older, like my memory is not nearly as good as it was, is that I forget stuff, and then like a movie like this, I'll watch it and it's brand new to me. 2 years too.
So we won't spoil a scene that happens early on in The Natural, because I actually didn't know the story. I didn't know the movie, and I watched it a few weeks ago, and I didn't know something that happens in the beginning of the movie, so I was shocked when it happened.
The Natural is really weird, kind of loosely based on a true story, but the beginning of the movie, that sort of happened once to a player. I just found it to be really weird and mystical. And honestly, The Rookie was, I didn't really love either, and the first half was so long and boring. The ironic thing about the whole thing is that his wife is like supporting him this whole time, and then I read about it, like they got divorced like a year later.
As Jason said, it's a one-year wonder most of these guys.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah, impressive. So that didn't hold up. I'm gonna pick The Rookie by default.
I'm voting for The Natural. A few reasons. It's beautiful to look at. Forget about the movie. I don't know what Barry Levinson is doing. Must be some sort of weird faded color scheme. Second reason, they changed the book. The book is based upon Shoeless Joe Jackson, and the idea in the book is that Robert Redford's character takes money at the end to throw the game. And therefore, as a result, his legacy and his career is ruined. And it's supposed to be a tale of hubris. And in the movie, because Robert Redford is just so charismatic, they change the movie in that he just leaves as the big hero. But Robert Redford is so charismatic.
Can I just point out one thing? How a player runs into the wall and dies.
Yes, like, that's my third reason.
What
that's
the
my
F?
Third reason. Yes.
What the heck is that?
As Av knows, in basketball, above the rim, a player jumped off a roof and died. In football, heaven can wait. The quarterback of the Rams died in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And then in baseball, finally, a player runs to catch a ball, hits the outfield wall, and dies as well. Av, which of those wins as best death in a sports movie?
I thought the Heaven Can Wait one was probably the most realistic, because I think it's only a matter of time before a football player dies on the field, unfortunately. I don't know why I'm laughing. But
I'm going to go with The Natural, because The Rookie is just abysmal. No one, if you must watch The Rookie, only do it for the last half an hour. The first 90 minutes of this 2-hour movie is just completely irrelevant. It's just like small town Texas, not in an interesting way whatsoever. Let's jump to our other matchup, which is our last. Number 5, Bad News Bears, against number 12, 42. Bad News Bears came out in 1976, so a nice little golden oldie. It's about a ne'er-do-well who coaches a little league team of losers. Walter Matthews stars as basically the guy he always stars as, a grouch.
We just want to say, you guys played a good game, and we treated you pretty unfair all season. We want to apologize. We still don't think you're all that good a baseball team. You got guts, all of you.
Come on, let's give him a cheer. Come on. Ready? Okay.
2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? Bears! Yay!
Hey, Yankees, you can take your apology out of your trophy and shove it straight up your ass.
And another thing, just wait till next year.
Going up against 42, which is the most recent movie on this watch, like 2013, the movie of Jackie Robinson. What else needs to be said? Han Solo, Black Panther, they're pretty much the cast. A legend or a grump?
Here's what Bad News Bears is. It's rated PG. You had multiple curse words, kids smoking, kids drinking beer, and a lot of child abuse. I just don't understand. This movie is totally canceled, does not hold up at all anymore. It's funny, but it's just wild. 42, I thought they did a great job showing the issues with the racism. Black Panther, great acting.
Why are we having Josh judge MCU, a movie with an MCU character?
If Black Panther's in the movie, it's a win. No, I'm kidding. But I thought it was really good. I thought he did a great job, and I'm picking 42.
Josh is throwing upsets left and right. He's got haymakers.
Should it be an upset to me? I mean, I think 42 moves on. The Bad News Bears is what it is back in the day. It was played Little League back in the 70s. You probably related to some of that behavior. But yeah, like you said,
you related to drinking beer and smoking in the dugout? Like you did that when you played Little League?
No, that was like, I'm talking about the 70s. I grew up in the 80s. Was way past me. Yeah.
Great for calling out our guest on how old he is. Please, come on.
I've mentioned it like 5 times already.
Yeah,
we know about your grandparents. Yeah, obviously,
I know, man. I'm going all over the place. Some of that behavior and the way kids act, you know, and then you got the Kelly V kid that's like, yeah, I kind of knew a kid like that. You know, and of course, it's all exaggerated, but Jackie Robinson's story is one of, if not the most important story in baseball history. And I think they did a really good job of it. Acting is really good.
Before we say goodbye to Bad News Bears, which was my pick to get out of this bracket, first off, Rolling Stone says it's their favorite baseball movie ever. And as we mentioned at the top, it's the only baseball movie that doesn't mythologize the sport. So it's really different than everything else here. There's two killer scenes. First off, when the parents are all coming together wearing tuxes and gowns in a local Pizza Hut in the beginning of the movie, it gets something so true about the way a certain kind of like suburbia that I sort of grew up in, that kind of area in Minneapolis. And then number two, this is the reason I would have voted for Bad News Bears all the way to the championship. The big end scene in Bad News Bears, where the coach beats his kid in the middle of the game and all the other parents are silent and the kids have a weird reaction, and Walter Matthews has this really kind of interesting response.
Kill that kid.
Throw the ball, Joey!
Go, go!
It's so insightful about the way parents and children and, you know, talking about playing catch with your dad. And then how the Bears celebrate when the son then sort of gives up on the game to get back at his dad, as if the Bears actually did something to win the game. I don't know. I think that whole way it's set up is very, very smart. It does something you almost never see in a sports movie. And just for that scene, plus the Pizza Hut, I would have voted Bad News Bears in a walkover. I think 42 is a disservice to Jackie Robinson, in that I think his genius was his perseverance, as opposed to one or two big moments. And I get it's hard to show someone running a marathon, but this movie sort of says, hey, here are two times when sprinted past the racists. And the genius of Robinson was the small moments every single day, every single trip, getting on the airplanes, getting on the buses.
Dodgers check into a hotel, a decent, good hotel. You're worn out from the road. Some clerk won't give you the pen to sign in with. We got no room for you, boy. Not even down in the coal bin where you belong. Team stops at a restaurant. Waiter won't take your order. Didn't you see the sign on the door? No niggers allowed. What are you gonna do then? Fight him?
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No. No. I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
42, you're going up against the natural. Josh, sounds like you have an MCU bias that is on full display. What's your pick?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 42 again.
Robert Redford is in the MCU. Come on, man.
Well, yes, he is. He is in the MCU. But, and this has nothing to do with that, to be honest. I think 42 is better.
42 has your vote. Needs to be said is that Harrison Ford is the best part of 42.
Yeah, he's good. He's very good in 42.
Is this one of Harrison Ford's best roles, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's right. So, you know, it's Han Solo, it's Indiana Jones, and I can't remember the guy's name. Branch Rickey.
And it's Branch Rickey right up there. Branch Rickey's character has very weird parallels to our uncle who passed away about a year ago in Minneapolis. The way he talks, the way he uses his hands, the way he kind of extends sentences.
You think God likes baseball, Herb?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means someday you're going to meet God, and when he inquires as why you didn't take the field against Robinson in Philadelphia, and you answer that it's because he was a Negro, it may not be a sufficient reply.
The final four to review, we have from the top bracket, Major League going up against 42, and on the other side, we're going to have Field of Dreams going up against Moneyball. So the right side of the bracket with Av was a wash, the favorites all advanced. The left side, we had big upsets thanks to Josh. Major League against 42. Who's moving into the finals?
Major League.
I'm going to agree. Major League.
Field of Dreams versus its matchup, Moneyball. I think we have a hint of where you're going here.
Field of Dreams in a route. If you want, I could recite the entire Terrence Mann monologue, but I don't think we have time for that.
That's how we're going to close the episode with that. So get it ready, okay? But no cheating. Jason, you have a last chance to defend the most data roster-based movie in this bracket, which is really your calling card. Are you going to do it?
Go Field of Dreams.
Do you guys like Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams? Not that I like him as an actor, really, but I think he's really a sap in this movie. He doesn't do much.
The baseball movie should be, I think, Field of Dreams wins easy. I mean, I think it's just hard to explain the game of baseball the way it is and Moneyball. They try to do the best they can. Like we talked about earlier, it's very flawed.
Field of Dreams. Major League, our number two against our number eight, going for baseball heaven. Jason, who's your champion?
I saw Major League 30 times. There's so many classic scenes. I can't vote against Major League. You know, as much as I love Field of Dreams, and I think it's a great movie, I'm going to go with Major League.
Av, before you vote for Field of Dreams, tell us something you like about Major League.
It's a lot of fun. And as we discovered the other day, one of the main things that all baseball movies have in common is the presence of Neil Flynn, the janitor from Scrubs, who's both in Major League and Rookie of the Year.
First role ever.
It's where it all began for one of the greatest characters in cinema history.
It's important that a movie which is about the love of one's hometown, Major League was made. The director wanted to make this movie for a decade because he's from Cleveland and he just wanted to make a movie. This is before Cleveland was good in the 90s. He wanted to make a movie about his hometown team. And the movie starts off just the first 5 minutes coasting around Cleveland.
Yeah, the score is awesome. It's what's his name from Toy Story?
Randy Newman.
But the passion of your hometown, that's such a part of, I would say, baseball more than most sports. Is that a fair call? History of baseball and hometown is sort of stronger in a way than other sports.
A lot of baseball fans would relate to the lead up to the season. And you see how the fans are kind of getting into it. And it's like, oh, spring is here. Indian fans are like, we suck. We always suck. First exhibition game. And you hear your hometown broadcaster and you go, all right, it's coming, you know, and smell the grass. You're just a month away or a month and a half away from real baseball. I think that anticipation is what a lot of baseball fans relate to as well.
Okay, so I'm the deciding vote. This is exciting. I agree with Av. I think it's a nearly perfect movie. I just watched it yesterday. I've seen it before. It's really good. My only issue with that movie is as a Chicagoan, we say you want to play catch. And in New York, they say you want to have a catch. And Kevin Costner's character says to his dad, you want to have a catch, which I thought was a big flaw.
That and Joe Jackson batting right-handed, you know, minor nitpicks.
Right. So other than that, I really liked it. And again, my 10-year-old self is really upset at me now for doing this. And I love Major League, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going with Field of Dreams. It's the best baseball movie.
The problem is, Josh is forgetting we have four votes on this panel. I'm not quite sure. Av, do I get a vote? Because it's not really a tie here.
You're the tiebreaker.
Do I get a vote or not?
You can vote, and, you know, obviously, ultimately, this isn't that relevant because they're both in the major tournament, and we can just, we can put a Twitter poll out for our, you know, four to six listeners to determine who what the actual best baseball movie is.
Jason, we'll need your support. I'm saying Major League. Field of Dreams, there's just some, like, Kevin Costner is too much of a sap. The middle part of the movie really drags for me. As soon as James Earl Jones is kind of in Iowa, the movie takes off, but then he disappears again. I don't love Major League, but I'd go for sort of a vanilla slapshot movie over sort of too many misses in Field of Dreams. I'll throw it into
die?
Major League.
Does James Earl Jones die at the end, or he just goes to visit heaven? I didn't understand.
I don't think it's very clear what happens. And I will say that every time I watch that movie, I still hope against hope that Kevin Costner will be allowed to ascend with them to the Ivy, and I'm disappointed every time.
To have one last shout out for Sandlot, because I agree, it should have been the championship. And I think my wife and I quote that movie at least once a week.
Let's quickly just knock out the loser's bracket. We got Sandlot against Sugar. Sounds like Sandlot's going to take it. And then on the other side, Bull Durham is going against The Natural. Who's your winner?
Bull Durham.
Bull Durham.
Boom. It was going to make its way into the bracket one way or the other. Is this our most competitive bracket?
I think so. I think so far the baseball has been the best sports movies that we've had. There's a lot more different stories that are told with like different ages and different types of baseball, major leagues, minor leagues, college, you know, little league, just lends itself to better movies that there's just like a wider variety of stories to tell. There's something about the way you could shoot baseball because it's really in a way is a one-on-one sport between the pitcher and the batter. It just allows you to like focus in on the sport in a way that like the vastness of a football game or a basketball game or a hockey game, frankly, even just like is hard to capture on film in a compelling way. And I think baseball lends itself the best.
Before we let you go, Jason, if you could pick one pitcher from any of these movies and one hitter to have the most drama going up against each other. It doesn't have to be the best. It's just your favorite. Which pitcher versus what hitter would you want? We'll even let you pick Babe Ruth's character in Pride of the Yankees.
I looked up the pitcher versus batter splits, hoping to see that Babe Ruth had faced off at some point in his career against Eddie Kitchode, or Chico, I don't remember now how to pronounce his name, but unfortunately they never faced off, so that couldn't be my choice.
From the White Sox?
From the White Sox.
I think it's Seacott.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to go with Nuke LaLoosh against Pedro Serrano.
And what would happen in that matchup?
Throw him a curve.
Power, man. If LaLoosh is throwing his curveball for strikes, Serrano doesn't have much of a chance. But if he throws him the fastball, I think Serrano will take him deep, 75 feet.
Heading home, that baseball documentary, the one about the Team Israel making it to their World Baseball Series, they say how the little mascot that they had, who, Josh, I forget what the mascot's called. But,
Mench on the bench.
Mench on the bench apparently was inspired by Pedro's
Joe Boo.
Joe Boo.
So strong connection across the baseball bracket universe of movies. Exactly. Joe Boo to mention on a bench.
Roy Hobbs facing off against Henry Rowengartner, and it's going to be a very quick at bat. 100 mile per hour fastball inside corner on the black, 100 mile per hour outside corner on the black, strikes him out swinging with the floater.
Is this pre-bleeding out of his gut or post-bleeding out of his gut?
It's a combination of all of it. He's mastered both the fastball and the floater. So
go with Charlie Sheen, Crush Davis. Correct me if I'm wrong. Every single time you see Crush Davis at bat, he home runs. Literally home runs in every single at bat in that movie. His number is retired by the actual real Durham Bulls.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Where can listeners find you, follow you?
Catch me on Twitter at MLB Depth Charts. My website, Roster Resource, is now part of FanGraphs. So depth charts, roster projection, payroll, free agent tracking, all that stuff. You can find me there at FanGraphs.
The offseason is often the best part of the game.
This is like Christmas for me today. First day of the offseason.
Well, thanks for joining us on your Christmas. That's a special time to talk baseball.
It's been fun. It's been fun. Thanks for having me.
Anything else you want to tell us about your grandparents before you go? I'm just messing.
All right, thanks.
Talking baseball. Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball. The man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke.
I want to just correct, Moneyball, the movie came out in 2011.
That's so weird because the same thing just happened to Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the wrong year that Social Network came out. He said 2011. 2011's and a 2010 or vice versa, both of which he wrote. Literally today, he wrote an op-ed. Winning down in Washington, I'm talking baseball. Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball. The man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber, and the duke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Now my old friend, the Bachelor, well, he swore he was the Oklahoma kid. And Cookie played hooky to go and see the Duke. And me, I always loved Willie Mae. Those were the